When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Inside the 8 o'clock hour on The Fan in New York. Happy holidays wherever you are. Hopefully you're kicking back. Maybe you're driving somewhere so you can start kicking back. I got you till 12. Keith McPherson on The Fan. Talking about Christian Walker. Talking about the Yankees' moves, their lineup. Every hour someone has to bring up Juan Soto. So we'll keep taking calls on Juan Soto, Christian Walker, the Yankees' lineup. 1, 2, 3. Remington in Manhattan. You're on The Fan.
Hey, Keith.
Hey.
Keith, a question I have. If you were to interview Mr. Judge, what would you ask him? And I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Oh, it's a good one. See, you know, it's a little bit of a curveball. Me being a somewhat new father, but not really now. My son is 20 months, and I'm heavy in thoughts about, you know, Christmas Eve and Christmas morning and how to make that special for him and really my wife, because we're going to be the ones that are going to remember it and take videos and have that time. You know, my question for Judge would be, how is he feeling as his wife is pregnant and how he's about to be a father and what it means to him? You know, obviously we know the story about Judge being adopted and not being with his biological father. So I imagine that, like, this is huge for him. This is a big moment, much bigger than the World Series, much bigger than you know, breaking the AL home run record. I would ask him about his, you know, fatherhood coming up. And then I'd ask him about the team and the World Series and, you know, failing in the World Series at the highest level, dropping that pop-up and, like, what that's done to motivate him, what he's already doing differently. And I just know how much of a competitor the guy is and how everybody raves about his preparation. I'm sure he's already working. I'm sure he's already in shape. I'm sure he doesn't have a gut like Juan Soto. 888-808-1019. Rich is in Patchogue. Rich, you're on The Fan.
I just wanted to talk. I heard you saying about Juan Soto earlier. Like, you think in 5 years he'll just be a DH, right?
Potentially, yeah.
Isn't he 26 years old?
He's 26 years old. Yes, he turned 26, like, that Friday,
yeah,
of the World
in the
Series.
Playoffs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If I'm not talking down on Judge. I'm a Mets fan, by the way.
No, we're not talking about Judge. We're talking about Soto, right? So 5 years,
I'm
he'd be 31.
He's 32, though.
In right field, in City Field, he'll probably be a little bit slower. Articles have been written about how he loves Italian food here in New York, and they even had a Dominican food spread at his press conference, and you just heard me make the joke about how he's, thanks for the call, Rich, how he's, you know, looking like he's got a little round. He could be a liability in right field. David Stearns is about his defense. He could be a liability in 5 years in that deep part of Citi Field. Is it far-fetched to think that they wouldn't just make him a DH, especially as, you know, how we're not far from Dom Smith and Daniel Vogelback being the DH? It's not ridiculous to think about Juan Soto being a DH in 5 years at all. Don't take offense to it. Don't take offense to it. We'll be here watching. It could happen sooner than that. 888-808-1019. Josh is in Selden. Josh, you're on The Fan.
Hey, how you doing? So earlier today, Evan Roberts said if the Yankees were in the National League, they'd be the fifth best team. He had the Dodgers.
Yeah.
The Phillies.
If my aunt, you know, she'd be my uncle. Yeah, luckily we don't have to worry about them realigning until probably the 2030s.
I wanted to see your opinion on that. And also on the flip side, if the Mets were in the American League, where would you rank them? Just, you know, be devil's advocate. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you for taking my call, brother. Have a good
night.
Yeah,
thanks for the call, Josh. You know, if I studied business or if I was a finance major, I might not be on the fan. If I, you know, would have drank and drove that night, I might not be on the fan. I don't know. I don't really have time for the ifs. We just got to go with what is. Like, you know, if I drove tonight instead of taking the train, I might not have made it here on time. Like, the Yankees are in the American League. So miss me with the conversation about the Dodgers, the Padres, the Phillies, the Braves, the Brewers. Because it doesn't work like that. The Yankees got to worry about being the best team that they can be and beating the teams in their division and getting to the World Series. The end. That's not a problem for the Yankees. That's not a problem for me or you. We don't have to worry about that. Mets fans, worry about the National League. Worry about the teams you got to beat in the National League because Griffin Canning's not going to get it done. Jose Siri is not going to get it done. Frankie Montas and Clay Holmes? Like, yeah. Like, that would worry me more than the Yankees, hypothetically, if they get to the World Series and lose, I'll probably be pumped that I get to go to back-to-back World Series. 888-808-1019. John's in Masbeth. John, you're on the fan.
What's up, Keith? How's it going?
Good. Rolling.
Yeah, rolling, right? Rolling. Yeah, so the Yankees, you know, I really love the moves that they're making if you look at it over the broad term. You know, we're maintaining our flexibility. We're not, you know, we had $90 million come off the payroll, and the only long-term contract that we added was Max Fried. We added an MVP in Bellinger. We added a Cy Young winner in Max Fried. We added a top-tier closer in Devin Williams. And all it's really cost us was, what, Nestor, Cody Poteet, and some money. We still have all of our top prospects, you know, in case we want to use them or use them as trade bait. We still even got more money coming off the books next year. You know, in NFL, they use the term dead cap, but we got $35 million of dead cap right now between Stroman and DJ. And, you know, a couple little numbers about Paul Goldschmidt. He was not bad last year. His OPS against lefties last year was .840, and his OPS from May 12th onward was .775. Yeah. That's far better.
He's Paul Goldschmidt, bro. And with the Yankees in this lineup, he's not going to be what we saw with the Cardinals. And thanks for the call, John. I just got to let you go. We're up against it, and pretty soon, Zach Rosenblatt's going to join us, and we're going to switch gears and talk about the Jets. You know, Brian Cashman told you at the winter meetings, just because we didn't land Juan Soto doesn't mean we're taking that money and going to spend like drunken sailors. It doesn't mean now we're going to take that money and go out and buy all the pieces. This is a game. This is a competition. They have time. I am pleased with what they have done up to December 20th. 888-808-1019. Frank is in Brick, New Jersey. Frank, you're on the fan.
Hey, Keith, how you doing? I'm with you there, what he's done so far. There's one other thing, a couple other things I like. I really like him to re-sign Canely. I think he's a big piece of the bullpen.
I can't do Tommy Canely. Right. I can't watch another changeup.
All right, but at first base, got no problem with Goldschmidt and have Rice up there to platoon with him every day. And I'd even be willing to go with Cabrera at third, move Chisholm to the second. And I'd be willing to go for Dugo for a year or two. Give him a flyer. Get him cheap.
Frank, I don't know. Frank, I'll let you go. I'm trying to do better. I'm trying to improve. Verdugo had his year to audition for the Yankees. He could have done a lot better. The defense was there, but then he slumped. They were like, I can't watch him ground out to second base again. I can't watch him pick and choose when he's going to hustle and then Aaron Boone defend him about picking his spots and him being banged up. No. I'm good. Tommy Canely, no more third tours. I didn't even want the second tour. No more third tours. Verdugo, hey, one and done. Like, we can do better. We have to do better. Let's win the World Series. Let's get to the World Series and win it. All right? If there's five teams better than the Yankees in the National League, we got to get a lot better, and I think they can. But going backwards and being content with what you had because, like, oh, yeah, he's an all right player. No, do better. And they have time to do better, and they will do better. And I think, you know, Brian Cashman's looking to improve the team. He's not looking to go back to what the team was last year. There are plenty of holes to be filled, and I think he's out to do that. let some young players evolve, see what they have to do. And that's the whole thing about spring training, too. You start to compete, you start to see who is who and what is what, and then you start to really figure out what you have and don't have. Also, once Christmas is over, once New Year's is over, guys start to go to Tampa and they start working. And you get an early look at, all right, this guy looks like he's in shape. This guy's been running better. This guy's swinging the bat better. They'll start to know where they really need to go. Let's go to Bob in Southampton on the fan. What's up? No, Rob. Rob, what's up, Rob?
Hey, it's okay. Best show on the fan, Keith.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
So I think, yeah, that last caller was crazy with Verdugo. If you, I think with the young prospects, Brian Cashman is putting a lot of stock in them. Jason Dominguez and Ben Rice, the production upgrade from the previous left fielder and the previous first baseman, I think together those two can combine for 50 plus home runs. And everybody wants to talk about Fried and Cole at the top. Obviously, they're the top horses out of a rotation. But Heal, without an innings limit, a full season, second year off the surgery, obviously, I think he's a dark horse for MVP. So I think just from our younger prospects, which I actually like, that strategy better, you know, having it kind of like that 1990s team with Judge and, you know, the homegrown prospects. I like this pad better, man. Thank you. Thank you for the call.
Thanks for the call and the compliment, Rob. But I think those are just like really lofty, extra hopeful, hope week expectations. You know, Ben Rice struggled. Obviously, he had times where he got a hold of him and you're like, wow, look at this kid swing. This kid can hit the ball. Dominguez has struggled as well, offensively and defensively. It's a lot to be seen. I think they're going to give him some run, but you have to have insurance. You have to have reinforcements. You can't go into the season saying, hey, let the kids play. It's them or nothing. But you do give them some runway. You do let them grow up. You do let them evolve. You do give them a shot. The league has gotten younger. And if you plan on, you know, continuing to buy free agents here and there, right? And we've already talked about money coming off the books from, I don't know, they got to trade Stroman, get that money out of here. They got to, you know, just keep going. Like, you know, they're going to see what DJ LeMahieu is going to be, but, you know, we're, you know, almost a year away from DJ's money coming off the books in 2026. And Stanton's money after this year is a lot less because it kicks in with the Marlins and you know, how much less the Yankees have to pay. I wish we didn't have the Rodon contract, but it is what it is. You know, Rizzo's money off the books, Verdugo's money off the books, Glaber's money off the books, Clay Holmes' money off the books. Like, they have some money, but they don't have to go run and spend it. They're going to spend it wisely, and they're going to try and get cost-effective with young talent that's ready to play, and that doesn't cost you a lot. Find a way to win like that. I know, obviously, we're looking at the Dodgers, and they spent $1.4 billion and won it, but, like, that hasn't been the formula. And there's no guarantee that that's going to help them go back-to-back. Nobody goes back-to-back. So maybe it's the Yankees' time to get there and win it next year, and they got to be crafty about how they do so. All right, 888-808-1019. If you guys want to hold to talk baseball and get your comments in, hold. I'm bringing in Zach Rosenblatt because I did my show on Wednesday, and he was going to join us at the same time, but he bailed last minute, and I knew something was cooking up, and I even told y'all, hey, last time something like this went down, we got these exposés, we got these long-form articles in The Athletic about what's going on in Florham Park. So we'll bring Zach in to talk about the Jets, Woody Johnson, and some of the things that we heard yesterday. Keith McPherson on the fan. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back. Joining us right now on the fan in New York, my guy from The Athletic covering your New York Jets, it's Zach Rosenblatt. What's up, Zach?
What's up, Keith? How you doing, man?
Good. Thanks for taking the time out, bro. I was going back to a few days ago when we had you on, and you know I always say, yeah, you don't owe me any of your time. I appreciate anyone that joins me. And when you had the bail last minute, I laughed and I came on air and I said, oh, something's cooking up. Something's happening because when this goes on, we're going to get an Athletic article with some, you know, things that you need to know. So we'll start there, man. I hate when I see people online try to assume, right, that you guys are trying to do a smear campaign, that you guys are doing some type of crooked journalism. Like, you have nothing to gain from that in writing these stories about the Jets. So tell us how this one came about. You know, you and Diana, how you kind of got to this point of working on this one, where it came from. Like, give us the background so people can just understand, like, this is your job and these stories are real. And honestly, they're more entertaining than the Jets are.
Yeah, you know, it, we've developed a reputation for writing these stories now, so I think people think we're going out of our way to do them and, you know, paint the Jets in a certain light. But frankly, the Jets do it to themselves. And, you know, over time you hear things, and that's kind of how I've each time we write one of these stories. And, you know, over time you hear things, you take notes, you get it in your notebook, and there's some things you hear it from one person, you can't run with it yet. And so you work to get more sources on it. And then as you're building that, then you hear other stuff and you start, you know, branching out from there. And all of a sudden you have a story about an owner that I think has done a lot of things that a lot of people around here have suspected for a long time. He meddles. And, you know, what we had is, you know, I think there's an assumption when these stories come out that it's all bitter former employees. Like we don't just talk to people who just got fired and then run with things. That's just not how it works. Like if anyone actually read the article, they would see that there's a bunch of people quoted in there that are currently employed by the team. We talked to the Jets. We ran a lot of things by them, and their PR person went on the record. So, you know, I mean, this goes without saying, I think, you know, I stand by our reporting 100%, obviously, and everything in it.
I appreciate it. It's well done. I saw Woody declined to comment. And of course, why would he? The funniest thing that came out of the article was me visualizing his son, Brick Johnson, coming into the locker room and kind of jumping the gun and giving a game ball to Garrett Wilson. Like, in no way should that ever go on. But it's funny because a few weeks back, I think we got from Reddit and just some other things online that, like, hey, you know, Woody's listening to his kids. Hey, more than you think, like, Brick Johnson and Jack Johnson have a say in this thing. And then you hear about the Madden ratings. Then you hear about this story, and it's like, okay, like, there might be some actual truth to teenagers running the organization. And then there was a quote from Joe Douglas about, I answered to a teenager, like, what can you say about the heirs to the throne? What can you say about Woody Johnson and how much you've learned about how much he lets his family just kind of play with the Jets like a toy?
Yeah, you know, I think that, and, you know, a lot of people have been like, so has he always ran the organization like this? Like, why are they successful, you know, at the beginning of the decade, beginning of the 2000s, I should say. And, you know, his kids were, I think, 11 and 9 years old when he left for London. And by the time they came back, they were teenagers. And, you know, I don't think they're, you know, I don't think they're running things necessarily, but I do think that Woody takes their opinions under advisement, and he gives those opinions to his staff. And that's what was relayed to us by people in the building. And, you know, the Madden thing, you know, we reported in our story in January that Woody sends tweets to Robert Saleh and other people on, you know, Joe Douglas, people that make decisions, and he'd send tweets or screenshots and he'd refer to them and wonder why the Jets weren't doing certain things that people were suggesting. And that's been a thing that's been going on for a few years now. And I think the assumption was always that Woody is not himself scrolling through Twitter, and he has two teenage sons who are on social media and they're reading articles and things like that. So I think Woody and this organization in general, as long, you know, I mean, you know how it is around the Jets. They're always the offseason champions. They like to win the headlines, and they also very much pay attention to the headlines. Like, that goes hand in hand. And so Woody wants to win the headlines, and he wants to see what people are saying about his organization. And over time, you know, I think you can't blame a guy. This is his business. This is his family. Like, you can't blame him for involving his family in the operation, especially if he wants them to take over eventually. But it's obviously just gotten a little too out of hand.
Yeah, and I mean, the jokes write themselves. They're being made fun of on Jeopardy. I saw a picture of Brick Johnson with a phone in the draft room on Twitter, and people are like, you know, this should have sent us into high alert. We should have known. You know, I think that this is going to be a thank me later kind of thing with you and Diana. I think that when the Jets do come out of this, when they do hire the right GM, they do hire the right coach, they do figure some things out, maybe end this playoff drought, we're going to look back on these exposés. We're going to look back on these things that we learned, and people are going to say, hey, thanks for doing your job and digging and finding this information. So let's talk about that next, right? That's actual news that the 33rd team has been hired, and I've been saying that now their reputation is on the line. It isn't just Woody. So that's a good step, Woody, right? Hiring some people that know what they're doing and saying, hey, I can't do this myself. Help me pick. And they've already interviewed a handful of candidates. Do you have any insight into the people that they've talked to, what they're specifically looking for in the next GM?
Yeah, you know, what I've been saying, honestly, for months at this point, because this season, I mean, Robert Saleh was fired a couple months ago now, which seems crazy. It seems like a lifetime ago. But what I've been saying throughout that process is that, you know, there's a history of owners, and I use James Dolan's the easiest example of owners who have meddled or have been labeled one of the worst owners in sports or in their league. And then they hire somebody really smart, they let them run things, and then all of a sudden you don't hear about the owner anymore. So, you know, I think this GM hire is absolutely crucial, but even more crucial is Woody. You know, I'm not saying he doesn't need to be involved. Like, again, this is his business. He should be involved. But I think he needs to hire somebody that can run things, is capable of, you know, standing up to him, or he's capable of pushing back on his opinions or whatever it is. Like, I don't know if that necessarily needs to be an experienced person or what it is, but I do think that this is an appealing job if Woody's willing to take a step back. They have a lot of talent. I think this is a city that, if you can build the Jets into a winner, you're gonna be, you know, feated as a hero around here. So I do think there's interest in this job. They can't interview anyone on other teams yet. I think they are looking for somebody with, you know, that has been in a football operation, that has some, whether it's scouting background, pro personnel background, league background. I think they want someone with notable experience, maybe not like a very young candidate, but I think they're definitely open to all comers. They're going to interview a lot of people, I think, and the process is just getting started.
Yeah, I think we heard a bunch of names from John Robinson to Louis Riddick, Thomas Nagy. I'm blanking on the names.
Jim Nagy and Nagy. Thomas Dimitroff are the other ones.
Yeah, Thomas Dimitroff. These are all guys that have done it before, and I think they're collecting data. They're getting intel from all these guys. Everybody that they talk to, they'll kind of figure out where they want to go. I thought that they should have brought in Bill Belichick at least for a conversation, at least for an interview. I understand, you know, he's been very vocal about Woody Johnson. I understand he said some things. I understand he left them at the altar so many moons ago, but he's on his last leg, so much so that he took a job at UNC. You know, any information on why they didn't bring Bill Belichick in? I think a great way to stick it to the guy would have been to interview him, string him along, and then be like, nah, we're going with Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, I actually thought it would have been funny if he fully got a back payback for the I resigned as head coach by acting like he was going to hire Bill, and then at the last second being like, actually, I changed my mind. Never mind. But you know, as for that stuff, like I don't think it was so much that they weren't willing to talk to him. I think what happened was, is Bill put out his feelers. The Jets, they were willing to listen. I think they were even in the process of maybe trying to get something set up down the line. But Bill kind of needed to know quick. Like, he wanted to know, like, right now, because if I don't know that I for sure have a chance at this job, or that I'm for sure getting this job, then I'm going to miss out on this UNC thing. And so I think he just decided he was going to go to UNC. He clearly wasn't getting interest elsewhere. I don't think it would have happened here, probably wouldn't have worked here. But yeah, I mean, I think to your point, like, you absolutely cannot get hurt by bringing in somebody like that at the very least and talking to them and picking their brain a little bit. It was pretty shocking when that came across, though, for sure, like, especially considering just how much he's been trashing this organization over the last 6 months.
Yeah, college football is closer than ever to professional football now with NIL and the transfer portal. I was just watching pregame there talking about how the SMU backup quarterback entered the transfer portal and is skipping the college football playoff. Same thing with the Penn State backup quarterback. I'm like, that hurts the team. What if the quarterback goes down play one and you got to throw in, I don't know, like a redshirt freshman? It's crazy also to see a Bill Belichick go to UNC. You know, like Michael Vick just got hired by Norfolk State. You got Deion Sanders at Colorado. You now need a flashy big name to coach in college to attract these kids, one, in the transfer portal, and to sign with NIL, get money from boosters. Like, that is the game. So my next question is about Mike Vrabel. I think a lot of signs point to him potentially being the next Jets coach. There's some rumors about him maybe even take it over for Jerod Mayo, one and done up there. But I think there's some real interest in him being in Cleveland with the Browns and taking over for Ryan Day as the next coach at Ohio State. What do you think about Vrabel being the next coach of the Jets?
Yeah, I mean, I think he is and should be their number one target. I think he's everything they need, both in terms of he's, you know, the cliche leader of men. He's going to walk in that room and command respect. He's a guy who fought his way to the NFL. He fought his way onto the roster. He played a long time in the NFL, was considered a real badass player. And then he immediately went into coaching and he worked his way up the ladder and he developed a reputation. And then when he got hired by the Titans were almost never the most talented team. They often were just out hustling, out working. They were out toughing their opponents and they were always really prepared. And Mike Vrabel is very good at late game situations and game management situations. They were always really, really good at that stuff. So I think he fits exactly what they need, but yeah, to kind of your point, I mean, everybody's going to want Mike Vrabel. I think he's going to be the top candidate on all these jobs. I think ultimately the Jets need to make the case that we are the best job available. But for someone like Mike, who's from Ohio, he's a legend at Ohio State. Like, I imagine he'll at least listen. I don't know that for sure, but I think if Ohio State fires Ryan Day, I think Mike Vrabel will probably be one of, if not their top targets, and he'll at least listen, because if he went back there, he'd be a god. Like, he already is. He's in Ohio right now, and if you go around Ohio, which I have within the last few months, for work reasons, like, then you hear these people talking about him, like, man, I wish he was our head coach, like the Browns. So I think that would be a hard thing for him to turn down. I don't know necessarily that he wants to leave the NFL and coach in college, but I think it would be hard for him not to at least listen.
Yeah. We're on the phone right now with Zach Rosenblatt, who covers the Jets for The Athletic. A couple more for you. You know, talking about coaching, you know, I looked at the spread of this game coming up this weekend as the Los Angeles Rams come across the country, a team that plays indoors, right? Oh. They're going to be out here in the cold playing against the Jets. They're 3-point favorites, which made me think, and you know, my analyzing, I'm like, okay, they're just going to win by a field goal, or it's going to be a close, high-scoring game. I think the over-under is like 46, 47 points. And I always come back to, they have a head coach that's won a Super Bowl, been to two Super Bowls, and always does more with less versus the Jets, who, like, they don't have the coaching. Jeff Ulbrich was thrown into a tough spot. These guys are figuring it out every week, and really, it's you know, Aaron Rodgers going out there with Devontae Adams, not really much of a run game. See what they could do, and hopefully the defense can hold. But like, if Mac Jones and the Jaguars can put up 30 points on them, what are you expecting to see out of the Rams? What do you think we can expect to see out of this game coming up this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, the reasons for optimism would be the Jets. You know, it's the cross-country flight. It's the cold weather game against a warm weather team. And it's Aaron Rodgers playing his best football of the season. Like, those are three things you can point to as like, all right, if we want to say we have a shot, those are the things. But outside of that, like, you know, the Rams have something to play for. The Rams are a really talented team. The Jets could be without Quinnen Williams. He hasn't practiced all week, and their defense has already been bad, even with Quinnen lately. And Quinnen, in the past, when he hasn't been in the game, it's been a disaster. So, and I don't think their defensive line has great depth. So if you don't have Quinnen Williams out there, and you know, the Rams have Kieran Williams, they have Cooper Kupp, they have Puka Nacua, and the Jets have been unable to tackle, and they've been inconsistent in coverage and things like that. So I wouldn't be optimistic they'd be able to stop Matt Stafford. If anything was going to be able to help them do that, it would be the weather. And, you know, I mean, it wouldn't be, you know, shocking if they got a win. The Jets every year have a couple wins where you're like, they should not have won that game, and they have a couple losses where you're like, they definitely shouldn't have lost that. And so I could see a win coming. I just would be surprised.
Yeah, they're due for another like Houston Texans win at home. Last thing for you. Have you been able to watch Enigma on Netflix, Aaron Rodgers' new documentary?
I have not yet. I was saving it to watch with some family over the holidays.
Okay, good. I've watched the first two episodes, and it has changed my opinion on the guy, but it's well-timed. That's what it's supposed to do, right? Like, they're putting this out right now for you to see all these different things about him, and it honestly changed my opinion about whether he should come back or not. Even as recent as Monday.
Are you going to do some ayahuasca before your next show, or
nah,
what?
Like, that's too much for me. I can barely drink anymore now. I'm washed. To think about this dude at 40 going to do the ayahuasca, I'm like, yo, he's
and talking
out there.
About, I saw the clip of him talking about caterpillars becoming butterflies or something like that. Yeah.
He was tweaking. Him and Jordan Poyer were out there hitting drums and drinking stuff out of cups and like inhaling smoke. You gotta watch it. It is absolutely nuts. But like, I feel like he needed to show us that, because so many people are like, ayahuasca. He's going to Colombia. He's going to, you know, all these different places. Egypt. Like, what? Darkness retreat. But why I say it's changed my opinion, I just actually started thinking about, you know, a couple things. It gave you a look at Aaron Rodgers and why he is the way he is, why he's so smug, why he's so condescending. I mean, the guy was an undersized quarterback coming out of high school that went to a community college and became, and he still got that chip on his shoulder. You know, I don't think he wants to go out like this. He's been vocal about living in New Jersey and redoing his house and wanting to stay. Devontae Adams is now here, and it's been a few weeks, and they're actually clicking. I just think about the Jets next year with an actual coach, an actual coaching staff, a new GM that can draft and maybe bring in some free agents and some other pieces, and Aaron Rodgers getting another chance. I know it sounds crazy, but I think he deserves another chance, and I think the Jets are going to weigh all things and say, what are we going with Tyrod Taylor? We're going to try and make Jordan Travis ready? We're going to draft Jalen Milroe? No, you're going to take the Hall of Fame quarterback And I think the whole league is looking at this Hall of Fame quarterback and how he's treated and how he goes out. And I think they're going to try and run it back next year with the goal being to just end the playoff drought and stop thinking Super Bowl is realistic and just win enough games to get to the playoffs. What do you think about Aaron Rodgers coming back next year?
You know, I'm not ready to completely rule it out. I think, you know, just based on everything both that we've reported, that Aaron Rodgers has said, things like that, his relationship with Woody, I think, has deteriorated quite a bit. Like, those would be the reasons why I could see him not wanting to come back. But I think it's ultimately too early for any of these guys, because it really comes down to who the coach is and who the GM is, especially for Aaron Rodgers, because it's going to be a two-way street. It's going to be, does this GM or head coach want Aaron Rodgers, and does Aaron Rodgers want this GM or head coach? Because I think it is definitely, like, has to be a mutual relationship, because Aaron, you know, as much as he's definitely the best quarterback they've had here in a while, especially when he's playing like this, he comes with baggage, and he comes with, you know, you have to run my offense and all that stuff. So I think there's a lot of factors at play here. I am curious. I think Vrabel and Rodgers would be an interesting marriage for a year, because then they could be pretty competitive next year, and that I would have my eye on that. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't have a good read. I lean towards him not coming back, but I'm not ready to say, like, he's definitely not coming back.
Zach, you're the man. Happy holidays. Enjoy the rest of your Friday night. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, have a good holiday, brother.
That's Zach Rosenblatt. You can follow him on Twitter at Zach Blatt, ZACKBLATT. He covers the Jets for The Athletic. He writes these articles with Diana Russini. And, you know, however you feel about what you read, I always say, believe half of what you see, none of what you hear. But it's all entertainment. It's good for radio. It's good for Twitter. It's good for conversation. And like I said, when I originally opened the call with him, I'm like, it's more entertaining to hear about this stuff than watch a Jets game. All right. Back to the phones we go before Art Stapleton joins me. That's the Jets conversation. Jets fans, feel free to call. I know there's still some people holding that want to talk about the Yankees and Juan Soto and Christian Walker. But at 9:15, Art Stapleton, who covers the Giants and the NFL for NorthJersey.com, will join us to talk about the G-Men. This is Keith McPherson on The Fan. KM to AM returns right after this.
Yeah, I got an idea for my favorite baseball team that'll help the team and help the fans, and I don't know, it'll just help social media. Stop playing Frank when we lose. That's my one request from this offseason. I don't care what bats you add, what pitchers you add. I can't really do anything to, you know, force my hand with that, but stop playing Frank when we lose. The Dodgers are running on the field. Their fans are running down from the 300 level. They're going to the visitors' dugout and saying, start spreading the L's. Ha 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 ha. Keith McPherson on The Fan. Let's get back to it quickly here. 888-808-1019. A long touchdown run for Notre Dame, and now they're inside the 10. I'm glad I did not bet on IU. I think they're about to start getting rolled. It's in the second quarter. The Fighting Irish look like they're about to go up 14-0 any minute now. And it's cold out there, and IU has had a great season. But it's probably going to come to an end, and you're really starting to see, like, Notre Dame is just like, it's been some years, but, like, they're Notre Dame. Like, they've got kids from across the country. They've got, you know, four-star, five-star recruits. And now in this era of NIL and transfer portal, like, they're starting to get guys like Jerome Bettis' son, Plaxico Burress' son. Like, they're going to have some good players. I don't mind seeing the, you know, Fighting Irish get back to glory. So now I'm glad I didn't bet on them, and I'm rooting for them to win and get it done. 888-808-1019 if you want to talk about that. If you want to talk about the Jets, we just had Zach Rosenblatt on. If you missed any of that conversation, you can rewind in the free Odyssey app to about 820, 825. And, of course, if you stayed on hold and you still want to talk about the Yankees, their moves, Christian Walker, Juan Soto, whatever, we can do that. You guys saw the video of Juan Soto bopping in the club? Everybody's Juan Soto's best friend now. Juan Soto walks in. Big money. Bottle service. Drinks on you? Yeah. And you guys know the song from El Alfa, right? The Soto Shuffle, where he says, Yankee, Bronx, 22. There's a video of Juan Soto vibing to his song, but he doesn't say the Yankee part. He knows. He knows the camera's on him. He knows he's a Met now. He chose that. Steve is out on Long Island. Steve, you're on The Fan.
Hey, Keith. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Always enjoy listening to you.
Thank you.
Because I think that you're the voice of just common sense. I'm with you all the way with the Yankees and Soto in the sense that I called the other show with Tiki and Evan, and Evan, I think, didn't agree with me. It was short, and Curtin cut me off because I said to him, we didn't want to lose Soto. I grew up in the Bronx. I'm a big Yankee fan. I didn't want to lose him. But the fact that we did, I made a comment. I said, it's addition by subtraction. Now, I'm not going to be addition, but you said about four or five times. I said, because we didn't do it by design, but the fact that we lost them, now Cashman is going to go around the horn, you know, with Hal and say, let's improve every position.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. They already did, you know, Fried. They already did Bellinger. They're not stopping there. It's still December. By January, February, March, you're going to have at least three, four, maybe a half dozen more new guys to improve every position. So collectively, as a team, you'll be better than maybe one, if you quote, you want to call him a superstar in the three hole, but I like to make a comment about that superstar thing. I think everybody buys Boris's Kool-Aid and drinks it hook, line, and sinker because here's the reason why. Well, let's look at his back of his baseball card. He's been in the bigs 8 years. He averages 25 home runs a year, and he averages 285. Above average stats, yeah, but superstar? Is he? Are we mistaking him for Ted Williams or Babe Ruth or even modern day?
Because of the walks, because of the war, because of the year that he just had, and he got the contract because of his age. Like, he's in his prime, and he could potentially be just getting better. And, you know, let's see if he can duplicate what he did without Judge. I don't really think he can. Thanks for the call, Steve. You just made me think of something that I was thinking about the other day with Cashman, as you used the phrase addition by subtraction. Cashman does not act like a fan. He's not a fan. He doesn't move with the emotion that we do as radio hosts, as fans in the stadium, as fans online, as fans watching at home. He does not have the emotional attachment to Juan Soto. Juan Soto is an asset lost. Juan Soto is the back of a baseball card. Juan Soto is a full player, offense and defense, that now, okay, you subtracted that bat. That's a huge loss. But addition by subtraction? You move Judge back to right field. You just got better in right field. Cashman knows he's got to figure out how to get more walks, how to get more RBI, how to get more home runs, how to get that back, right? He hasn't figured that all out yet, but he figured out how to be better in right field. 888-808-1019, addition by subtraction. You take a left-handed pitcher in Nestor Cortez, you trade him away. Okay, after you added one of the best left-handed pitchers in the game in Max Fried. Plus, right, you let Clay Holmes go sign wherever. Oh, he signed with the Mets. They want him to be a starter. Good luck to you, Clay Holmes. Get in that lab and be the best 3-4 starter you can be. Who knows? Whatever. That's not our problem anymore. Addition by subtraction. You just got better because you literally had this guy blow so many games where if he didn't blow half of those games, maybe you have a better record than the Dodgers and have home field advantage. You go make a trade for Devin Williams. That's your new closer. You're better. And Cody Bellinger gives you flexibility and versatility. At 29, a former MVP that has seasons where he's hit 40 bombs, this is a guy that you could play at first base. You could play in center field. You could play at left field. And since you did that before, you know, Christmas, it gives you flexibility to look around and see what comes to you, right? Having that guy, if they want to start Cody Bellinger on opening day at first base, they can. And having that guy, you don't have to pay Christian Walker what he wants, 4 years and $100 million to be a Yankee. You can let him go to Houston and take 3 years, $60 million. He took the L, right? I don't think that deal was out there for him to come to New York and be a Yankee. And even if it was, the Yankees are talking about the qualifying offer and their picks. It's not something they wanted to do. They have options. I made the joke about Cabrera and Birdie playing in the ALDS at first base. They survived that. And people said, oh, well, they have Juan Soto. Yeah, they're going to figure out who is going to hit. A Paul Goldschmidt, you guys can tell me all day he's washed. You can tell me he's cooked. I got to see it. I got to see if he's got nothing left in the tank. He's one of the best baseball players we've watched over the last decade. One of the best hitters we've seen over the last decade in Major League Baseball. He's got nothing left in the tank. 888-808-1019. Eli is in Washingtonville. Eli, you're on the fan.
Hey, Keith, what's going on? Listen, man, us Yankee fans have to stick together at this point because there's very little of us backing
up. Yo, it's funny you say that because there are too many Yankee fans that I think are drinking Steve Cohen and the Mets Kool-Aid and, like, turning on the team and just like, this plan is not good. This isn't good enough. How are we replacing Juan Soto? It's like, yo, chill out.
It's funny because what you said about his stomach, it reminds me of a meme I saw. It had Bartolo Colon's picture as with a Met jersey, and it said, "Watch Soto 2029.
Yeah, and like I had someone say like, "Oh, you hung up on a caller because he pushed back," and I had to enlighten the guy on Twitter. I'll find his Twitter account. I said, "No, I didn't hang up on him because he pushed back." His Twitter account is Lindor MVP. Shout out to Z Bertko. I'm like, this is time. I was coming up on a break at 8, and I had a guest at 8:15, and the caller was talking about, "Oh, so you think Juan Soto will be a DH at 31 potentially?" I don't think that's out of school to say that in right field and City Field, he might not be so nimble out there where David Stearns and Carlos Mendoza might say, "Hey, you know, most of these days you're going to DH when we go on the road. You know, when we go to Yankee Stadium, we can throw you out there."
And not only that, he wasn't a good fielder to begin with in right field with the Yankees. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. And, you know, the other call that also said that, you know, the Yankees will be a fourth place team in the National League. That's something the Mets have to worry about.
That's not like, what does that mean? It's erroneous, like, irrelevant.
Yeah, like these guys are celebrating getting Juan Soto, right? But they fail to understand that for the next 5 years, the Dodgers are still stacked.
Yeah, and the Phillies and the Braves. The Braves are going to be healthy. And that is your World Series window. You need to win in the next 5 years with Juan Soto while he can play the field, while he is in his prime. Because once he gets over 30, things are going to change. Thanks for the call, Eli. 888-808-1019. Peter Schwartz coming up with the update. Keith McPherson on the Fan. 2 hours down, 3 hours to go. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.